Andy, unlike Mel, you've been getting around a bit and been in and out quite a bit too.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you found things? How's the dating game in Ho Chi Minh City at the moment?
You know, dating does not really exist right now, only because there's nothing really open yet and it's the wet season, so...
What? Wet season is the best season, Andy.
Nah, well, it's not really the way, not really the wet season I kind of want, if you know what I mean.
Let me correct myself. In Japan, on Valentine's Day, it's the women who give chocolates to the men.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then,
I was wrong.
So the gender assignments are reversed.
No wonder I'm not dating a Japanese.
So
that was never going to work.
When was the last time we all tasted real truffle? And how, you know what I mean?
Oil, truffle oil on potato wedges.
No, but is that real oil? I mean, is that real truffle oil though? That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of truffle oil.
Yeah.
But the real truffles are fantastic.
Yeah, that's the thing. Beautiful. Like, I think yeah. Like, I don't think I've actually tried real truffle.
I haven't eaten a real truffle yet.
I've had truffle oil on my chips.
Just the oil.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't.
Oh, I've got some old smelly shoes over. Hello and welcome to the Bureau Podcast. I'm Matt Cowan, the Bureau Chief and your host. Thank you for joining me on this Sunday. Yes, Sunday for something different in Ho Chi Minh City. Why on a Sunday? No reason really. It's just that when you make content, you don't necessarily stick to a hard and fast schedule like you would in a real job. And speaking of content, it's been a busy week at the Bureau for that. On today's show, we're going to chat a little bit about what's coming up on the Bureau, including what appears to be some changes on the horizon for Instagram and Facebook users. There appears to be some tweaking going on, which is going to have an impact on creators who rely on vanity metrics to receive income for their posts. As usual, we'll be doing our COVID wrap with all the stats and observations of the week in Ho Chi Minh City, and we'll also get your mouth drooling with a look at emerging food trends that have hit Ho Chi Minh City over the past year or so. All that and more on Vietnam's award-winning podcast. Speaking of more, much more in fact, and then some, is the Bureau's content manager, Melanie Kasul. How are you, Mel?
What do you mean more? Are you saying I gained weight?
Huh? No, not at all. Not at all. You're just more. You're more than everything. More than this. Yeah. Now, Mel, you ventured out into District 1 briefly yesterday for the first time how many months?
Oh, I don't know. I think since June. 5 months. Yikes. But, you know, I don't really miss it. I mean, I've always been happy in my District 7 bubble.
Oh.
Yeah, most everything one would need to survive in a pandemic or otherwise is, you know, available locally. So it was interesting.
Okay.
But I didn't feel like, oh, after all these months, finally. You know, it wasn't like earth-shattering or anything.
Well, no. District 7 is the best district in Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And joining us again in the flesh, making me the meat in this eclectic sandwich, is none other than co-host Andy Tran. How are you, Andy?
What up? Loving it.
Hey, how come he gets some music? How come I don't have that?
You might get one next week.
It's good. Thank you,
for that?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think I actually pressed the wrong button.
That's what she said.
How are you, Andy?
I'm good. Thank you so much, guys. Man, it's been a crazy week. It's fine. It's starting to get, you know, things back on track. I don't know if it's living. Well, what did we say last week? What did we say in the last episode? Something about
back to life or
back to life.
Or what was it?
I don't know.
I can't remember. It's been a long week.
It's a lie either way, but it's starting to, the lie is starting to become the truth.
Okay.
Slowly but surely, but it's been good.
Andy, unlike Mel, you've been getting around a bit and been in and out quite a bit too. So how have you found things? How's the dating game in Ho Chi Minh City at the moment?
You know, dating does not really exist right now, only because there's nothing really open yet and it's the wet season, so.
What? Wet season is the best season, Andy.
Nah, well, it's not really the way, not really the wet season I kind of want, if you know what I mean. When you're riding and you have to wear the ponchos, it becomes a bit of a pain.
I see what you're getting at.
I see.
Yeah, but it's, no, it's been good. It's been a busy week for me. I think really it's life admin work as well and just kind of planning ahead for, Jesus, it's 2022 coming up really soon.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, so, you know. Recently went to the OG bubble.
What's the OG bubble?
Taldian.
What's OG?
Original.
The original.
Oh, right. The original bubble. All right. Okay.
Besides the obvious no dine or takeaway only type of signs, it just seems like it's living up to its reputation as a bubble, just, you know, in its own little ecosystem. Everything's going well so far. Everyone's walking around, you know.
Yep. Same as usual.
Same as usual.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed.
Riding around the streets with no helmets on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. Dogs wearing little booties.
Yep. And, you know, floods, mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah, you got to have webbed feet to live in District 2, you know, especially this time of year. Now, Mel and I have a confession to make, Andy. Yesterday.
We were in your hood.
Yeah, we sneaked into the Wintai Bin area.
You didn't tell me?
Well, we knew you were busy.
You got to give me the 411. What's wrong? Whenever you come into someone's hood, you got to let them know.
Yeah. I thought this was going to be a sticking point. It's going to be a bit of a problem. Yeah, we popped in there because we needed to get a few things.
Yeah. But the Fonghe, you know that?
Fonghe.
Yeah, yep. that mini supermarket. Where you have
the
like
export shop.
The export shop. Still, there's nothing inside there. I think the whole import, export, delivery, you know, supply chain is not really back to normal because there's nothing there really.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry,
Andy. Just to let you know, like, I mean, probably maybe because the food that is probably stuck in customs during lockdown has probably gone off. You never know.
That's right.
But,
yeah.
You know, so. That could be the case.
Well, you'd also messaged me earlier in the day and you mentioned Bunryu.
Oh, yeah, Bunryu.
Yeah, the Bunryu, as you call it. And I thought, oh, okay, there must be a place open near your place. So, yeah, we went there.
The Bunryu.
Yeah. But of course, you can't dine in, though. No. So we had to take away.
Yeah, one up on the sideboard
there.
Yeah,
Wintai Bin.
Yeah. It's like next to the side entrance of the museum. The Fine Arts Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like.
And near that, next to that alleyway at An House.
Where they have the egg coffee. Yeah.
And then we popped up to the park at Pham Nhu Lao to eat it.
Ah, oh, cool.
Yeah. So it was good. It's a good Bunryu, or what do you call it?
Bunryu.
I think that's because of the sauce that they have, right? It's a little bit stinky.
The mum tom.
Yeah, but it's really good, though. Yeah.
I mean, to like some of my local friends, they're like, yeah, it's pretty authentic to the north.
Really?
Yeah. But to me, I don't think it's that authentic to the north because there's actually a nice place, and I think we've mentioned it in previous episodes where we were talking about certain places to eat.
Yeah.
But there's that place in D4 nearby the
pier.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And it's like a street alley
place. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can have like
Some Jew.
Yeah, some
Jew.
Yeah. Yep. And you can have the Bunryu like there, and it's cheaper. It's not as sweet.
That was sweet.
Typing. Yeah, and it's like just a lot more real, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, so speaking of hoods, we invaded your hood.
And we also picked up the 4 and 20 traveler pies there as well. They're just up the street from your house.
Oh, so that's where you got it from.
Surprise.
So it tasted amazing. I haven't had one in ages.
Yeah, we're talking about meat pies for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about.
Australian meat pies.
Australian. Yep. I haven't had one for a while.
The original.
And I just put two away just before this recording. So
swallowed it.
So yeah, that's the
I'm feeling it as well. Right.
So it's called the 421 pie.
4 and 20.
4 and 20. 4 and 20 pie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we didn't get it at Fonghai.
Oh, okay. Where'd you get it?
We got it at Kim High Butchery. So it's in front of the Audie's Boutique Hotel.
Audie's Boutique.
Where's across Audie's? From the Hammock. Hammock Hotel. There's
a little butcher. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Like, real facts. Every time I walk past it, there's like no one there. And I'm always curious to kind of see like, how do they sell their produce? But
well,
they sell a lot.
They sell a lot.
Yeah.
But they're also a wholesaler, not just a retailer. So that's where they make their money.
You know, it's right next to a cafe called Gulp.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've had a coffee there.
Yeah, that's actually pretty nice. The owner's pretty cool. Like he's, you know, it's pretty chilled out.
Hey, Andy, before we get stuck into what each of us has been doing this week, I just wanted to say our barbershop video did pretty well.
Woohoo.
Over 500 views. Not bad considering we didn't share it far and wide and the algorithm, of course.
Mm-hmm. Dang, that's really good.
It's not bad.
Algo-wise, like it's really, really good.
Yep.
But you know what? Like, we've had these conversations off camera, or I mean, off mic. But we also know like Facebook is encouraging businesses to utilize its advertising services by purposely throttling back organic reach, so that you know it forces you to actually pay more.
Yep. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. My posts haven't really been going too far lately, but. Yeah. Our barbershop video did pretty well. Yeah. And yeah, as I said, we didn't really share it much. So that's encouraging. So
that's cool.
I'll definitely be back to get another haircut soon. Of course, the barbershop we featured was Mekong Barbershop in District 3. I just want to make it clear that we paid for our own. I paid for this mustache.
I know. It's still going pretty good.
I know.
Are you trimming it too?
No, I haven't trimmed it yet.
So it looks pretty good.
It's creeping a little bit further down my face as we speak. It's quite a cozy venue, not far out of the city center. Now, I don't want to say too much about it here because we want you to watch the video, of course.
Watch it.
But yeah, they did a great job. Andy, did you get any comments about your new hairdo?
No, it looks more respectable. But when I mention about my mo, everyone just laughs at me. And I'm like, but
kind of like what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're Asian.
And I'm looking at it.
I know. So for anyone who's listening, I'm growing this mo just out of a joke, but now it's kind of like serious because we're reaching Movember, but I've been growing it since June 15. So if you ever see me in the street and you go, where's this mo? And I'm like, it's here.
You know what this Mekong Barbershop should do is, aside from this, what's that, Prem Lock? They should also do mo implant services. Oh.
They'd be run off their feet.
Now, have some special herb and they'll just paste it on you. It stinks. They'll just paste it on you. It'll grow. Just let it grow, you know.
Now, comments.
Like mold.
Yeah.
Comments about my look ranged a fair bit. Of course, I'm donning this dirty big mo at the moment. And the comments ranged from love it, it suits you, to ooh, that tash.
Mm.
So I'm not really sure who's telling the truth.
You got that Murph Hughes look. And if it grows down any longer.
Which part of me? Are you talking about the
handlebars? The handlebars. No, but if it grows down any longer, you're going to get that chopper reed. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Right? I don't know. Anyway, check out our video on the Bureau Asia YouTube channel or on Facebook and Instagram at the Bureau Asia. Now, just quickly, Andy, what have you been working on this week? I think you've got something coming up.
Yeah, dude, I do have something coming up. It's coming up this coming Thursday on the 21st. I have my latest LinkedIn Local Saigon event. So for anyone who's listening, who've never heard of LinkedIn Local before, LinkedIn Local Saigon is essentially a community event that pulls together kind of business professionals from all across Saigon to talk about various topics. I typically just have it as a speaker networking night. Big thank you to some of the sponsors like Intercon, you got Rooster Beer, HOD, OzCham, you know, Hong Kong Business Association, all these great brands that come through. Yeah. And the Bureau as well. Big thank you to the Bureau for helping me out as well. And it's going to be really cool. Like it was supposed to be at the Intercontinental way back in May, but obviously due to the situation, we couldn't do it and we kept postponing it.
That's right.
But it just came to the point where I was like, you know what? If we postpone it any further, we're just going to be lumped with all these big events at the end of the year. And so there's all these big events at the end of the year, plus whatever company you're working for, they'll have even a better event, their Christmas event.
Christmas and New Year and party.
Exactly. Yep. And I'm like, man, I don't want to go to my own event. I'd rather just go to their events. So I was like, hey, let's just make it an online thing. And the panel guests, big thank you to those guys. They're coming along. It's going to be really, really cool. It's going to be super relevant as well, because we're going to discuss a topic that we're going to talk about, you know, in terms of living in the new norm. So it's going to be called like Customer Journeys, Awareness to Sales. We've got three guests from Colliers Vietnam, Mercedes-Benz Vietnam, and Ulabs.
Ooh, Ulabs, what's that?
Yeah, what is that? Ulab is a edutech. Super, super interesting. The CEO has a really interesting background as well. Young, really smart, switched on. So we're going to discuss those three industries. We're going to discuss the customer journeys from their perspective. So it's going to be really cool. There's going to be a Q&A. It's on Zoom. You can find it. Just type in LinkedIn Local Saigon number 4 on Facebook. It'll come up. Or just head over to my website, andrewtran.asia. Head over to the LinkedIn Local Saigon.
Is that everything, Andy?
Biggest plug ever. But hey, it takes 30 seconds and it's going to be really fun. And there's prizes to win, all that kind of jazz. But it's going to be really, really cool. Hopefully see you guys there.
And how about you, Mel? Anything pop up this week in the digital marketing field that got you going?
Well, it's combined with my need to buy new clothes really as well. Well, as you guys know, I teach digital marketing.
I wondered why you were sitting here naked.
So
My eyes are closed.
Yeah, there's a screen up here, by the way. So Andy's.
So it's back to school.
I can just see your mo. Sorry, Mel.
Yeah, so going back to digital marketing. So you guys know that I teach digital marketing in RMIT, and it's back to school. The campus is open and I'm like, oh, wow, I need to buy new clothes because now I have to go to campus and face my students and do the whole shebang. So I was looking at, shopping. Now, shop digital marketing from a customer perspective, but then also I found out that there's something going on in e-commerce and it got me really interested. So it's something called shopping festivals. Yeah. So forget about Black Friday. It's always been one of those, you know, weird Western shopping occasions that I never really understood why it's here in Southeast Asia and specifically in Vietnam.
That happens though, doesn't it? Like we have Halloween here.
Well, Halloween is for children, obviously.
But it's not really a Vietnamese festival, is it?
No. But it's like, you know, remember that time when people just come up to you and because you're white, right? So I'm talking to Matt.
Last time I checked.
And they would like, happy Thanksgiving. It's like, Australia.
Really?
That happened?
That's happened to me a little bit. And it is weird.
Yeah, it's
Totally weird.
Yeah, so
we obviously don't celebrate it, do we?
No.
Although it might be getting a bit more popular with the younger generation in Australia these days.
I don't know.
I haven't been there for so long.
I mean, I know younger people in Australia are starting to celebrate Halloween because it is fun. It's for kids.
Yeah. So anyway, Black Friday is an offshoot of Thanksgiving, right? So it's like the Friday after Thursday, Thanksgiving, and there's lots of sales. And actually, when you look on YouTube and you put in Black Friday sales, you see all of this craziness of people lining up and just creating like this mob thing, you know, just to get to their shopping.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, it's nuts. So anyway, I just felt that Black Friday is such an out of context thing when you're shopping in Vietnam. Apparently what's happening right now is that there's something called shopping festivals and double digit shopping festivals.
It sounds like my worst nightmare. Can you imagine going to a shopping festival, Andy?
Yeah, but also it's very Asian because they go with like a double digit numerology kind of like, when will this shopping festival happen?
That
like
makes sense.
From what starting like a single day, right? So it started out with Singles Day. And this is the online shopping festival invented by Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba. And it's held on November 11. And it's widely also now known in the West. So now a series of similar double-digit shopping festivals is set to follow, and expect local platforms like Lazada, Shopee, and Tiki to jump on the bandwagon as well. So
Andy, what's 11? Is that significant in Chinese culture?
Numerology. No, it's just 1-1.
No. Because single, you're single, one.
Okay.
Forever alone, 1-1.
Oh.
November is November is 11, and then the day is 11. So you're forever alone, F-A.
Isn't the 11th always Remembrance Day?
The 11th.
But that's 11. A different context.
I know, that's a different context, but that's how I see it sometimes.
Yeah. So just recently, something came up, which was October 10, so 10-10. Mm-hmm. So up next are year-end sales festivals, again, Singles Day, so 11-11.
Okay.
And then on December, before Christmas, they're going to come up with 12-12.
So there's going to be a shopping festival before the biggest shopping festival of the year, Christmas.
But this is e-commerce. So what I'm interested in is that I wonder if this trend in e-commerce and digital marketing is going to, you know, translate spill also in here. The brick and mortar stores. Because obviously after the pandemic, this recent lockdown, all the shopping malls in Vietnam really want, you know, footfall.
Yeah.
Just to recuperate.
Yeah, they need that foot traffic back into their stores. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I, you know, I just went down the rabbit hole just because I wanted to buy new shirts. That's the whole spiel. Well, I wanted to ask you, so Matt, you lived in Japan.
Yep.
So you've also dated a Japanese girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Andy, have you dated a Japanese girl?
No.
No. Okay.
Are we really going to go down this rabbit hole?
No. But it's still related to the shopping festival.
Oh, okay.
So see, in Japan, there's a shopping festival that I don't think is going to be as, you know, like accepted here in Vietnam. It's a follow-up holiday to Valentine's Day, which is called White Day.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's celebrated exactly 1 month later on the 14th of March.
So that's not celebrated here.
So I don't think so.
Okay.
Not the real white Valentine's Day. So in this particular shopping festival, gifts like white marshmallows, white cakes or sweets, mochis, you know, white handkerchiefs, stationery, and even sometimes white pearl jewelry.
Pearl necklaces.
Yeah. Well,
white's right, as they say, right? Yeah.
But the thing is, it's the women who's supposed to give these gifts to the men in their lives.
Wow. Never happened
So it's, it's a reverse.
The ladies get the gifts on February 14 and then the boys get them the next month on the 14th.
Mm. We'll see. Do you think that'll work?
No.
Here in Vietnam?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it might depend on the pressure that, you know, the guys give back to their girlfriends and partners.
Sorry, let me correct myself. In Japan, on Valentine's Day, it's the women who give chocolates to the men.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then, the gender assignments are reversed.
No wonder I'm not dating a Japanese
So
that was never going to work.
For the White Day, the men give back to the women. Yeah. Right.
But why is it white? Why can't it just be like, I mean, kind of just be, I don't know.
Are we going to go down back? That path?
Yeah.
I know where this conversation's going. And I'm the only white dude in the room.
No, I think like maybe it's the flags. Like the Japanese flag is red and white. So maybe it's about the red for Valentine's Day.
Guys surrendering, is that
and
why?
And then the white. That's a Dido song right there, white flag.
White's worn at funerals. Isn't it? In Asia, it's quite common to wear white.
Yeah. White and really basic colors. No blacks, just white. Yeah. Yeah. Really basic colors, beige. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, are you going to ask me?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what about you?
Well, now that you're asking, I did some filming this week on Wednesday and Thursday, not necessarily because I'm a hard worker, but I kind of things up on Wednesday. It was partly my fault and partly a tech fault. My camera was it was getting condensation in it. So anyway,
it's wet season.
Yeah, everything's a bit moist at the moment. So anyway, I got it done And all going well, the vid should premiere on this coming Tuesday
awesome.
At 5 p.m. Vietnam time on the Ticket to Ride YouTube channel. So keep an eye out for that.
Check it out. Hey, I'm looking forward to it. Can you give the people some idea what's going to happen on the first episode?
It's going to be wet.
It's going to be moist.
Judging by my editing job at the moment, I'm not too sure what's going to come out. But I had this thing in mind that I wanted to go into town and just give a little bit of an overview of what's happening in Ho Chi Minh City at the moment. I know that sounds a little bit boring, but I've done it with a bit of a twist.
It's my take on it.
Okay. So it's not just me walking down the street and saying, hey, this is open. That's not open. This is shuttered. The prices are pretty cheap at the moment. You should come in November. No, I'm not going to do that. So look out for it. There's a bit of a touristy vibe to it, a little bit of a historical vibe to it as well.
Yeah. It's very Ticket to Ride.
And it's very Ticket to Ride and hopefully a little bit funny. You know my sense of humour, Andy. Yeah. So should have you just rolling in the aisles. We've already briefly touched on the corona situation here in Ho Chi Minh City, and the vibe we're getting is that it's only a matter of time before things open up a little more. We had a bit of a false start last week after rumours circulated that bars and restos would be allowed to open last Sunday. I believe some did in District 7 and some continue to do so, and I know of at least one that opened and then was politely asked by the local authorities to close because they hadn't received official word by then. However, the first domestic flights in 2 months took off, but airlines faced immediate cancellations because of strict quarantine regulations on arrival in Hanoi. Ticket prices said to be around $300 US for a one-way flight from Ho Chi Minh City to Hanoi, and a tropical storm didn't help matters either. Nevertheless, some train services have resumed with Saigon-Hanoi reopening again. There you go, Andy. You were wanting to go up to Hanoi, take the train, but add an extra couple of days on for the return trip if you do so.
Okay. All right. Definitely.
Still in Hanoi, restaurants and cafes have been allowed to open with a capacity limited to 50%, including parks, hotels, public transport, and taxis. Da Nang is loosening their restrictions too, so that's good news for a city that's been hit extra hard as well. Here in Ho Chi Minh City, things are on the down, but in a good way. The 7-day daily new case average has dropped to just a tick over 3,500. Keep in mind that this time last month, that figure was 11,426. And nationwide, just to give some perspective, the number of patients under treatment as of yesterday was just under 49,000. A month ago, it was just over 216,000. Mel. Just in case.
Well, really happy for those numbers to go down. Really, really happy. Well, look, to each his own, those restaurant owners. You know, like you mentioned, there was a bar that we actually frequent that was asked to, like, you know, close back again. But yesterday I saw about 20 people gathered outside another local pub in District 7.
Right.
And the patrons, I think they were celebrating somebody's birthday. They weren't even wearing face masks. This is like combined, like, adults and their children. And you know what? I wanted to take a sneaky photo of them and send it to the authorities. But look, as I always say, just make sure you follow the guidelines issued by the government. And then what you do, it's up to you.
Yep. Now, guys, I know we've probably talked about this a bunch of times on this show, but here goes again anyway. I was watching The Pretty Late Show on Friday night, as I usually do, and the special guest was David Sosa, a bit of a stalwart of the nightlife scene here in Ho Chi Minh City. He managed Lush Nightclub for a long time and is now heading up Vespa, a lovely little bar on Tonduktang Street across from the river in District 1. And he actually put the question to hosts Petey and Pat how they thought nightlife will come back once things reopen, meaning what will venues have to do to entice people back into their bars and clubs?
That's a really good question.
So, Andy, what are three things that will get you to a bar when they reopen?
Well, really quickly, ambiance.
Ambiance.
Does it sound French? Does it sound cool if I say that?
Yeah.
Ambiance. To the French people, if I walk around speaking English in a French accent, is that offensive to you?
I actually thought you said ambulance.
Ambulance.
Which would kind of fit in.
It's like people who get mixed up when they say agent and they say Asians. Ambiance.
Okay.
Location, obviously. Yep. And safety. Because, you know, less people. Like, I'll give you a good example. I've been going back to the gym over the last, like, week or so. And they've implemented kind of rules with regards to how people go in. So you got a book to go in.
Oh, wow.
And then you also got to show that you're fully vaccinated and you only have a certain set amount of time. So very similar to the way they operate in Singapore and other places.
Okay. Have they implemented Instagram rules in gyms?
Yeah.
Like how many times you can take a photo of your ass each session?
Probably. You should probably put a rule for the PTs, like to not stare at their phones as like they're counting like 1 to 10.
So how long are you allowed to go to the gym?
1 hour.
Okay.
But that's cool. I mean, my workouts take about an hour anyway, and that's fine. But having the less people actually creates an air of safety. So I feel safe when I go in. I understand like, oh, and also that particular gym, there's no sauna, there's no shower. So there's no, none of that kind of weird transmission.
No perverts.
Yeah, that too. Mm. That too. So, oh, I'm sorry, I dropped my soap. No, none of that. None of that whatsoever. So they're the three: ambiance, location, safety. But three things that will get me, or want me to get me there though, is hot double fried potato wedges.
Ooh, yum.
With a side of sour cream. Didn't realize.
So no one does that at the moment.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe not. So in a bar, this is what you would like.
Yes.
Oh, there's some of the bars, they serve potato wedges with truffle. Or should we wait for the next segment
for
that?
Yeah, we'll wait for the next segment for that. Yep.
But anyway, potato wedges, bottle or a glass for me because I can't handle a bottle of red Cab Sav.
Okay.
And whatever the woman likes to drink.
This is after going to the gym, right?
This is after 11:11, of course.
Okay.
Just moved to Japan. And what about you, Mel?
Okay. What would make me go back to a bar or any nightlife
sort
venue?
Sort of nightlife, yeah.
Okay. Number one, lower prices. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I know everyone is trying to, you know, recoup their losses for the last 2 years. But it's not going to happen with a windfall, okay? It doesn't matter if you create crazy cocktails, but then you charge like $250 for them.
Yep.
All right? So
I agree.
You don't do it windfall, but with regular clientele coming through your doors. And if establishments make sure they have a fair price to work with, then I would support that establishment.
What's a fair price for a cocktail, do you think?
Like
from a consumer perspective?
Well, let's say, what do I order normally? Aperol Spritz. Mm. Okay. So this is my go-to drink in the afternoon, which is like 3 o'clock. But then in the evening, my drink, like my nightcap before I go home would be a Bailey's.
Oh,
okay.
Oh.
Right.
On ice cream?
No, just a regular Bailey's on the rocks stuff. So, so those are my two favorite, you know, drinks to start end to end. And then a few more in between. Look, maybe four or five drinks from 3 o'clock to let's say midnight.
At what price though? Say at a bar.
Yeah, I'm calculating in my head. That's why I was. So I don't want to go over like a million, okay, obviously, for a really good night out, you know.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good.
Yeah, Andy's eyes.
I'm like, what?
No. He's just like, yeah, that's cheap.
Sorry, I'm taking, that's why I'm with Matt. See, that's why we're together, Andy. I'm taken. Oh.
I'm
yeah.
all about value instead of.
Yeah, it's all about value when it's with me. Yeah, it's value.
So that's my first. That's what I thought about first. Mm. Number two, more promotions for groups. Okay. Mm. So that make advanced reservations. Look, speaking from personal preference in this quote unquote new normal, I would probably only make an effort to go out, like get dressed, put on my makeup, wear high heels and meet friends and family if it was somebody's birthday, anniversary, or if you were celebrating a special occasion that warrants spending money.
And if you had a new outfit.
Well, let's see. I still have to shop on those shopping holidays. Yes. And related to more promotions being offered for group bookings, alongside with that, a private dining area. Again, picking up from what Andy said about, you know, having less people for safety reasons. Mm. So I'd like to have an exclusive space for me and my friends. Mm.
Do you guys think that businesses like F&B restaurants will have to almost cull the amount of menu items they have?
Oh, yeah.
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 So they almost, you almost have to like stick to, if I was a restaurant, I would probably have my basics and then I would have my like
special,
like my, but my key special, like what I am known for, because I think to go back to your point, like you can't charge too much. So you can't go back to what it was before. You got to find a happy medium between the two. And I think nowadays, like everyone's watching their dollar or watching their dong. Everyone's watching their dong. And so with that in mind, you're going to look at certain restaurants and go, you know what? That's known for XYZ dish.
I'm going to go there.
I'm going to go there. And
yeah.
Check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd imagine that could be the case. And maybe it'll come down to availability as well.
Seasonal specials could be a trend as well. Yeah.
For me, it would have to be value. Mm-hmm. So when I say that, I'm not saying just that it needs to be cheap.
Oh, which, thank you, Maddie. Now I know that I have value. I'm not just cheap.
That's been the benchmark for quality for so long in this town. Cheapness. Venues will have to prove to me in advance why I shouldn't just go to my nearest 7-Eleven or wine shop and just buy some booze and bring it back to my garden in my apartment complex where I can watch the sunset either by myself or with a couple of people close to me. Hang on, where's this whimsical music? And let me go back to where we were watching the sunset, either by myself or... Anyway, so that was unplanned, by the way. So I think tied into value are my next 2 points. The next one is experience. You know, what sort of experience are these nightlife venues going to give me?
Mm.
And when I say that, I'm not talking about some kind of theme park experience. Mm. I just mean, will it be an experience that will drag me away from the garden, you know, or my home bar that I've had almost 2 years to improve on and is now stocked with everything I want?
Oh, wait, remember before the lockdown, there was this big anniversary party that we went to and there were these Russian girls dangling off the ceiling and doing aerial ballet and stuff like that, that kind of experience?
Well, that would probably get Andy out of my garden. Yeah. That would be one tactic. If he's hanging around with me too much, I'll say, Andy.
But I guess what I wanted to know is that kind of experience?
Not for me, but that might be an experience for, you know, some other demographic. But that's not really, that's not really my thing. Mm-hmm. But I mentioned that, you know, a lot of us now have a stocked bar at home.
Yeah.
And we've spent 2 years on YouTube learning how to make our favorite cocktails and it's enjoyable at home, out in the garden. We've got a nice garden out here. Yeah. So, you know, to the bars, what are you going to give me? So the third main point would be the people.
Okay. The bartender that talks to you.
Yeah. So it's nothing new, is it?
No.
You know, all these things I'm mentioning is nothing new, but they're going to just have to level up. And I was just talking about service yesterday with a friend of mine, and it just feels for the most part here in Vietnam that once you become a VIP or a regular, the quality of service actually goes down.
Really?
Yeah, in some of the establishments. So it's almost like they've captured you, they've got you, they've taken your money as well.
Mm-hmm. They know you're going to come back.
They know you're a creature of habit. Mm. And so then it's like, okay, time to get the next one. He'll be all right there. Just, you know, we'll get the next
one. He's already in the door.
Keep milking that cow.
Yeah.
And an example that comes to mind is that I've been in a cab a number of times and they've all but booted me out of the cab at the end of the ride because the cabbie has seen another potential customer on the curb.
Mm.
And they're like, you know, okay, get your money, and then it's almost like, hey, can you shut the door on the way out so I can start the meter again for the next customer, you know? So when it comes to bars, for example, the people, like you said, Mel, the people behind them will have to really lift their game to get me back.
Yep.
And then once I'm back, they're going to have to work pretty bloody hard to keep me there, I think. So Japan's come up in this conversation a fair bit today. So none of these sort of flashy, overpriced cocktails in Japanese tea sets with dry ice streaming out. Hang on, let me play this music again. And I don't mean serving me up overpriced flashy cocktails in Japanese tea sets with dry ice streaming out of it and pieces of dried ginger to the side as an amuse-bouche.
Amuse-bouche.
Well, that's French again. I thought we were talking about Japanese stuff.
Well, there was a Japanese tea set involved. Yeah. But I think you get the picture, right?
Yeah, I mean, just speaking again with this Japanese theme. Mm-hmm. Remember when we spent like 2 million dong on this omakase Japanese?
Omakase?
Omakase. Yep. And the chef didn't even speak to us. And we were like in front of each other. And I was like trying to have a conversation like, oh, so is this the fish of the day? Oh, what is that? You know, how can you, do you make, you know, fresh wasabi? What is your secret? And it's like, oh, Matt, speak to him in Japanese. Well, and Matt was speaking to him in Japanese and he still wouldn't say anything. It's like, we're here.
Well, you've real Japanese,
you've
or is he?
You've got to understand that the concept and the word of omakase is that basically it means the chef does whatever he wants. So Mel, he chose not to speak to you. That was up to him. I'm a bit funny about this omakase kind of trend. It's almost as though the chef's woken up this day and gone, you know what? I don't give a f- I'll give them what I want to give them, you know? Yep. It's kind of like mum when you were growing up.
I mean,
she's had enough of you and she's just like, eat it, here, eat it.
The thing is, it takes the experience that you're looking for.
True.
But in terms of the people quality, he didn't even talk to us. And it's like, we've come here to chat with the chef, you know?
Yep.
And to sit in front of the bar, you're in front of us. Give us something to say, you know, what's the thought process of your menu tonight?
Yep.
And that didn't happen.
And
so,
two mil is quite a lot of money. It's not like it's not expensive. Chump change.
Yeah. So obviously it also doesn't take out the value.
Yeah.
So we're not going to go back to that restaurant.
Hey, you two, the other day I received a notice on Instagram telling me that they were trying something new.
Ooh.
It said, I quote, "Now when you see someone's story, they'll only see that you viewed it when you react or comment."
Oh.
So it got me wondering, is it finally the beginning of the end for vanity metrics? I did a little digging about online and it turns out that Instagram has been playing around with this since the end of last year. I guess I don't have enough likes and I'm one of the last to get notified. Mel, in your opinion, what's the reasoning behind this?
I read about this back in March this year, actually. And according to eMarketer, and this is, I'm quoting the eMarketer article that I read, "This isn't the first time that Instagram has experimented with removing like counts. It began running similar tests in 2019 for 7 countries, including Australia, Brazil, Canada, and Japan, then expanded testing to the US that November." So maybe it's only reaching Southeast Asia now.
Mm.
Okay, so continuing with a quote, While some celebrities and influencers were opposed to the development, many marketers didn't care.
Yep.
Because likes aren't really a good measure of engagement and reach anyway. Yeah. So the reason for the experiment, I think, is related to what we discussed last week in the podcast, which is to make sure that the platforms, the social media platforms like Instagram, are still engaging while creating a healthier environment for the user's mental health.
Do you, do you believe that though? Do you think Facebook really cares about that? Or is it just them being...
Well, the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate is making them care. I guess that's the whole point.
But if they were really caring about it, wouldn't they have implemented it already, like 2 years ago? You know, so...
But also environment can expedite certain things like that, you know, those kind of changes. So it was probably on the horizon, but because it was probably something that they put less of a preference to up until recently, they just went, we'll just keep kicking the can down the road per se.
Yep.
Now, like with everything that's happening with the US Congress, a lot of, you know, a lot of talk around mental health, then, you know, it's kind of was like, okay, it's a new vogue. Let's bring this back. And so that's probably why they're able to implement this kind of change really quickly.
Do you think they would implement it quicker if, say, TikTok came out and said, hey, we're going to do the same thing? I just kind of feel like Facebook's not implementing it very quickly. They're dragging the chain because their competitors aren't.
Well, the thing is,
you know,
TikTok is not in the same league as Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
So although Facebook usage is going down for the younger demographic, and it's TikTok and Snapchat are, you know, a close second and third, Instagram is still way up there in the charts. So they're not, it's not, they probably wouldn't care.
Okay. They might see it and then they might go, oh, cool. Okay, well, let's observe what everyone else is doing. And then if it's like, yeah, it's working, cool. Let's see if we could possibly expedite that into our product line. But you know, I think they're going about in their own tune.
Yep. So Andy, do you really care who and how many people view your content?
Not really. It's just vanity metrics for me. Like Mel says, like I think if you're, it's going to actually convince or make brands focus more on their content and focus on relevancy in context to their audience. And so instead of trying to get users to just kind of like and continue to scroll down their feed, it's like, how do I create an attention-seeking element into my into a feed.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I wasn't able to verbalize it before earlier when I was thinking about this. Yeah, that's sort of what I wanted to say, because it perhaps it'll come back to content creators making things more
part of the community, like be part of that conversation, you know, entice people to be part
better
of that
quality, better quality content.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily the quantity.
Yep.
Because I think what's happened is like you're hearing like Gary Vaynerchuk and a few others like, you know, post 3 or 4 times a day, do X, Y, and Z. It's like, yeah, but that's all about volume. But I get it from his point of view, because volume, like what it does is it creates micro moments within the feed. And so right now, like you're trying to just get that even that slither of a second within the newsfeed of whatever audience you're trying to get. So now, you know, if new is Instagram or Facebook, they're implementing these new changes and they're putting in more preferences to content pieces that creates some sort of community or some sort of conversation within the community, then they're able to promote that more, which therefore means like that's more relevant to that community, and therefore like you're gonna have more people conversing on that piece of content coming through.
Okay, so let's say for people like us, in the scheme of things, we aren't very influential, right?
So we're creators, we're not influencers.
Yeah, we haven't got the influential part.
Okay.
Yeah. So what impact, if any, will this have on us?
Look, there are many ways beyond likes to measure an influencer program. But the question is, will marketers, direct clients, and brands in general in Vietnam have that maturity and lateral thinking to look beyond the like? You know, creators like us, as we said, look, we're not pretending to be influencers. We're content creators. Now, if people see us as influencers and celebrities, that's fine. Thank you very much. But, you know,
we are in this room.
Yeah. So thank you, Andy. Thank you, Matt. So creators like us, especially English language creators in a predominantly Vietnamese speaking market, will always be pushing uphill. I mean, that's just our reality. So
just before you go on, sorry. You said something about maturity. What do you mean by that? Brands of Vietnam have...
Well, F&B industry in specific, you know, since we just came from a conversation about how will the F&B industry bounce back?
Right.
What would make people go into their establishments? I would love to write something about a new experience or how friendly the people or how value the menu is. But I'm just creating content for them. There's nothing giving back to me. For me, that is my classification of the F&B industry in Vietnam is not mature enough to see that they can have an effective influencer program with the Bureau, for example.
All right.
And so in more mature markets where influencer marketing is regarded with, I would say, quote unquote, more respect, ultimately, the wishes for engagement metrics, impressions, downloads, like you, Andy, it's not just B2C market you're working with.
Right.
You're working in the B2B arena. So the content that you create is about downloads, saves, attendance to an online or offline event, registrations. So these are the kinds of metrics that should be monitored for, you know, are you hitting your KPI? Are you hitting your key performance indicators? So these are the measurements for success. Because you know what? If you want likes, you can buy fake likes from fake followers. And for me, that's not a true measurement of success. So as to your question, what impact, if any, will this have for us? It depends on the brands and the companies and the clients that we want a relationship with. And so far, the relationship is only one way.
Yeah.
We haven't really, from personal experience with the Bureau, with Ticket to Ride, we haven't really had any returns on our content creation investment.
Yeah, and to add to your point, Mel, when it comes to, you know, and to also answer your question, Matt, like what impact, if any, this will have on us as content creators, and also as a consultant. So besides creating content for myself, I consult for other brands in B2B and B2C spaces. And with these kind of changes that's going to happen, there needs to be a level of understanding and education that goes up from top down. And so that comes back down to your people. So it's not just bringing, you know, smart people into your business. It's about upskilling the people around you and also really just understanding what is relevant KPIs, because you can measure anything. And if you're smart enough, you can like not fudge numbers, but you can look at numbers and then paint a specific story that will help you get whatever, you know, budget that you need to do X, Y, Z. So it's really just kind of isolating what is the key objective that we want to try and get. And for small businesses, it's like they might have a very simplistic mindset, which is we just need more people in our establishment. And you know, we just need more people.
Yeah.
We need more dollars, we need more people. That's what we should do. And as a marketer, it's a little bit different than that. It's more like, well, I get it. You want more foot traffic in that store. So what are we doing right now? How do people know about your brand? How do people want to be able to, you know, seek your brand out? Cause we just spoke about it before, like, you know, like platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn to some degree, this beginning to throttle back. So it means like the stuff that you post is not necessarily going to get the amount of eyeballs relative to the amount of followers you have. So if you have 3,000 followers on your Facebook page, not all 3,000 are going to check out that post that you posted. So you'd be lucky to get maybe 5% of that coming in. So I think there's a level of understanding education that needs to be done from a top down level in terms of, and then that then cascades down to how do we develop content, you know, going back to those particular metrics that is really relevant.
More important.
You know, what is engagement rate? Well, engagement rate isn't about likes. It's about comments. Okay, cool. So then
questions,
all that kind of stuff, you know, and now the onus is going to be back onto businesses, whether or not you're B2C or B2B, to converse in those kind of hashtags. So you see a whole bunch of posts with like a million hashtags. It's like, great. Now, how are you going to get your brand out there? Well, part of that is conversing within those hashtags and be able to kind of pull audiences back onto your page to actually start looking at it, exploring some of the content pieces that you have.
Beyond
the like. Yeah, exactly. So it goes beyond that like. And so I think, put it really quickly and put it simply short, you know, there's some of the impacts that we'll have on us as content creators, but also as a consultant as well.
Okay, great. And finally, I guess the million view question is content really king?
Content is king with relevancy. So, you know, understanding your channels is relevant to your entire digital ecosystem, or your ecosystem if you're using offline elements will help, because it helps marketers, decision makers understand where they want their brands to focus in and around. And what is the relationship? So looking at the objectives as well. So for example, in the startup and F&B world, do you use or do you spend more time and emphasis on creating content for Instagram, given that your customer converses more on that platform versus Facebook? You know, so that's a question that you got to ask yourself. And then it's like, do you begin to use Facebook as merely just a presence channel?
Awareness.
Yeah. So you mostly curate content. So it's a combination of curating really great content, but also creating your own content coming through. So there's some of the things that you got to think about. So it's about like kind of understanding what is the challenge or what is the objective of that particular channel relevant to your audience to, and then also to your branding objectives overall.
Is content really king? Look, content is king only if it works with a queen, which is context.
Okay.
It is still important, obviously, especially if influencers have brand partnerships and contracts with agencies that make them part of the purchase process. You know, you can't really just look at an influencer, you know, taking a photo of a hamburger and then just collecting, you know, 500 likes in 1 minute. There has to be, that influencer needs to be part of the purchase process. Will that influencer have a promo code, for example? Or in the US, you have these on Instagram, you have social selling. So let's say I'm wearing a shirt and it has a hotspot, and then you can click on the shirt I'm wearing and it goes to an e-commerce platform. You know, and then you can buy it there immediately, or you can buy it straight on the social channel. But that's not happening yet in Vietnam or in most parts of Southeast Asia. So that's a bit difficult to achieve. But if you are simply an authentic creator who creates content without any kind of brand affiliation, then you are at the mercy of the platform's algorithm wherein you are posting your content. So in this case, the algorithm is the king. What you need to think about then is how will the quote unquote like vanity metric staying or disappearing completely, not just on IG, but also on YouTube, on LinkedIn. You know, what does it mean for your potential income or lack thereof?
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks, guys. And just a reminder for listeners, in case you haven't seen our barbershop video.
With no brand affiliation.
Please go and watch it. We want some more views to make us feel good about ourselves.
I'm in the big leagues, Tony don't miss me. Ballin' like Houston, hey, feeling like Whitney.
Righto then, guys, it's turned out to be quite the foodie episode, at least off mic with our 4 and 20 Travelers Pies and Bundaberg Creamy Soda.
Yum, yum.
We're looking for a sponsorship, by the way. Food trends that have hit or you've noticed hitting Ho Chi Minh City over the past year or so. Are there any? So now let's try and make this a little bit of fun. I'm going to run by you 6 food trends that have hit our plates over the past year or so here in Ho Chi Minh City, and I want you to tell me if it's taking the piss or it's legit.
Are we going to be sampling these foods?
maybe next time.
Okay.
Okay, so all you have to do is jump in, say whether it's taking the piss or it's legit, and then quickly tell us why.
All right.
Legit to quit. Let's go.
Yeah. Okay. So you ready?
Yeah.
The first one is sourdough, including sourdough jam donuts.
Ah.
It's a piss. it's like people who smoke menthol cigarettes. You're smoking already. Might as well go for full strength.
Ooh, okay.
Though I do like a good sourdough bread though, but sourdough jam donuts, I don't know. What about you guys?
I didn't grow up eating bread. All right. I'm a rice eater. All right. Being Asian. Sourdough. Legit, but I can quit.
Yeah. It's the jam donut thing is a bit weird. Yeah, I'm like you, Andy. I love sourdough, but the jam donut thing, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to number two. Bubble tea or boba tea?
Booba tea.
Boba.
What is that?
Boba. What is boba?
Boba.
Tapioca.
It's Americans trying to infiltrate what bubble tea should just be called. Bubble tea.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Or pearl tea.
Pearl tea, that's right. Yeah.
So is it legit or is it taking the piss?
No, that's legit. I mean, everyone's drinking that at the moment. Yeah. So this is alleged, right? But allegedly there is some sort of correlation between people who drink too much boba tea or bubble tea or pearl tea. And it increases their estrogen count.
Really?
In men. Yeah.
In men, not in women.
Well, I don't know. I haven't focused a lot on the, I just noticed because I was like,
Mel's actually growing a mo as well. Yes. So she's on Grab already right now ordering bubble tea.
Yeah. No, but isn't that testosterone?
Yeah, well, she wants more estrogen, doesn't she? Yeah, she's got no. Yeah. Anyway,
So I see that, and I mean, it kind of maybe explains the myth.
Mm.
Other races have been perpetuating about.
Interesting.
Well, I wouldn't mind a dose of
estrogen,
because it was found in Vietnam in the last couple of years or so when the bubble tea thing happened that there were actually fake bubbles getting put in the
gross.
Tea.
So, like plastic.
Yeah.
Ew.
Why? It's tapioca's everywhere.
Well, there's fake everything, but
it's like cassava, right? It grows in the backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think the bubble tea trend is legit.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, what I'd like to contribute to our discussion is that it's the Milk Tea Alliance. Have you heard of that?
No, what is it?
So the Milk Tea Alliance is an online democratic solidarity movement mainly made of netizens from Hong Kong, Taiwan, Thailand, and Myanmar.
Oh.
And so these countries in Asia, they are obviously they have some issues with their governments, some, you know, political thing. And so there's such a thing as the Milk Tea Alliance. So the trend goes beyond food. It goes into a political movement to bring democracy to these countries.
Wow.
So I really like that one.
Okay, cool. Number three, truffle on everything.
Oh, gosh.
That's the piss.
Wait a minute. Are we being sponsored? Because if we're not, I'm
not last
no comment.
Time I checked.
Oh. Yeah, no comment on the truffle thing.
I'll comment it. I have no affiliation to this stuff. No, no, that's taking the piss, man. Because to be honest,
I have a shuffle on it. Sorry, Andy.
But no, I like serious question. When was the last time we all tasted real truffle? And how, you know what I mean?
Oil, truffle oil on potato wedges.
No, but is that real oil? I mean, is that real truffle oil though? That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of truffle oil.
Yeah.
But the real truffles are fantastic.
Yeah, that's the thing. Beautiful. Like I don't think I've actually tried
I
real
haven't
truffle.
Eaten a real truffle yet.
I've had truffle oil on my chips.
Just the oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't.
Oh. Well, I've got some old smelly shoes over there.
But Matt, you've had truffle, like the real one, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that Truffle great. Fest or something like that? Like,
yeah, we're editing that one out.
Okay, moving on. Number four, Kraft everything.
Oh, gosh. Craft, artisan, everything, right? That's like a synonym of craft, right?
Okay, move
on. I think it's real.
So like craft beer, craft wine, craft bread.
Okay, yeah. But I mean, at what point...
Sorry.
At what point does craft become like established or mass produce? You know?
Yeah. Like, you know, when I think of the word craft, I think about my artwork when I was in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. It's like arts and crafts.
Okay, moving on to number five. Kombucha.
If it's real, then it's legit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like it, hey.
I don't like it.
Really? Yeah. I grew that stuff. It's like
you grew it in your...
Name. We had a name.
Wait a minute. You grew it like you made it?
Yeah, yeah. No, we got the
You also
the
got smelly Scoby. Socks?
Yeah. Yeah, and then you kind of fed it with, not yeast, but you fed it with sugar and like, tea and stuff, and it grows.
Like a Mr. Potato Head?
Yeah. Well, I called it Mr. Rupert, and then it just kind of grew. So Mr. Rupert grew to a point where it's like, oh, and then... You're able to kind of take.
Do you still talk to Mr. Rupert?
I hug it if I can. I squish it. With
okay,
my
do you guys want to talk about this offline? Okay, and finally, fur everything.
Ah, fur cocktail, yeah. Fur pizza.
I'm a fur fan burrito. Of a fur pizza.
Have you had the fur burrito?
No, I haven't had a fur burrito.
A fur burrito?
I don't think it's
I've
here.
Had a fur burger.
Yeah, in America, I saw it. Like, fur, I'm like, but how do you. Not get the juices from messing up the actual burrito thing.
Wow.
And then I don't know how they've done that.
It would be nice though, I think.
Yeah, I think this is legit, especially for Vietnam. Mm. If there's one thing that you can pho everything, it should be your national dish, right?
Yeah. Just don't sell it for $100.
Phew. That's all we have time for today. I trust you enjoyed our insights into Vietnam and our favorite city. Not to mention Andy's private life.
Hey, I think our private life is on
And
display.
I didn't say private parts. Andy Chan, thanks for being a good sport as always. And thanks for getting out of bed on a cozy Sunday morning to be here for this. Although I suspect the picture of the 4 and 20 pies I sent you earlier had something to do with it. If you'd like to follow Andy on Instagram and Facebook, search for him at Andrew Tran Digital. I think he's the only one. And while you're at it, suss out his super engaging and educational marketing course for small to medium businesses on his website at andrewtran.asia. And Melanie Kasur, the Bureau's own tasty little traveler. Who needs a 4 and 20 traveler when you have one around the clock?
Oh.
Follow Mel on Instagram at Melanie Kasur. In fact, pop over there now and you'll see precisely what she had for lunch before recording this today. And I dare you not to drool over it. And as always, thank you, our loyal followers and supporters, all 5 or 6,000 or so of you across our channels. Not that I'm counting and care much for vanity metrics these days. Please don't be shy to comment and please respond to our weekly question and poll on Anchor and Spotify. Just scroll down the episode page and you should see it there. We'd love to hear what you think. Otherwise, you can get in touch via all the Bureau Asia channels, including our website, thebureauasia.com, on YouTube at The Bureau Asia, and on social media. Where at, Mel?
At The Bureau Asia.